Guys, this is Succession. This is HBO. If you don't want to hear me talking about Logan Roy, talking about then don't listen to this. There are bad language words in this show. Hello, and welcome to the Mr. Darcy, How Could You? Episode of Slate Money Succession. I am Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with Emily Peck of Fundrise.
Hello.
And we are joined on this here Lackey Slack by Lizzie O'Leary. Welcome.
Hello.
Lizzie, what are you up to these days? Plug your podcast.
I host a podcast for Slate, so it's very hard for you to track me down called What Next TBD. But I also watch Succession fervently.
Fervently. You've been on this show before. It was amazing. So we had to have you back for the grand finale. We have so much to talk about. Tom, obviously, and Connor and Kendall and Logan and Lucas. And oh, wow, what a finale. It is all going to get unpacked right now on Slate Money Succession.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, let's jump right in here. Lizzie, what do you think?
Oh my God, Tom!
Wamsgan!
Mr. Darcy, how could you? I mean, but also,
what do you mean?
But also good job, Tom!
Take his revenge.
Tom came through with the knife in the back for his own wife?
Who is the monster?
I mean, she told him, she took him to town. Is that a phrase people use? In the last episode, dressed him down, told him she didn't love him. Maybe she'd have his baby, maybe not.
She'd freeze the baby, who knows?
She's not exactly setting him up. Who knows? She's not exactly creating a bond of trust between her and her husband. I felt excited. You're not supposed to root for anyone in Succession. That's the rule of Succession, but I was—
Is that the rule?
Like, go Tom! Like,
can you root for Willa?
Oh,
poor
Willa.
Oh, fuck it. Fuck it.
Fuck it.
Why not?
How
just
bad
fuck
could it be?
How bad could it be? I mean, talking about, like, we had that great, like, face acting from Kieran Culkin in the previous episode when he realizes that he sent a dick pic to his own dad. This one where she's like, fuck it, I'll get married. And she, like, kisses him. And then she gets in the car and she looks out the car like, oh, my God. Like, my entire life is now miserable for the rest, you know?
That's like some real last frame of The Graduate stuff.
Did you catch her weeping at the wedding? A lot,
like,
of weeping.
Wine,
not the good kind
more
of crying
wine.
At a wedding.
Yeah.
Yeah, people get drunk at weddings. Like the drunk countess was great.
You mean,
well, you
Greg's
know, Greg is
wife?
Right, yeah, preparing for his duchy? How do you say it?
Duchy?
Felix?
Duchy, yes. Yeah, the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg or Liechtenstein, I can never remember one or the other.
12 times removed or some shit.
Yeah. Some place where you can hide your money.
I think I've mentioned this on the pod before, but Greg has a character arc in the way that, like, a lot of the rest of them don't. He's actually significantly far removed at this point from how we met him at the beginning of season one, you know, and his clothes are fitting better. He's more comfortable in his own skin. He's got not one, but two girlfriends.
He's been sufficiently corrupted that he doesn't need a soul.
He's been sufficiently corrupted that he doesn't need a soul. He's like, souls, boo.
I mean, is that a character arc or just like a, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
if the arc goes down
humanity.
And to the right, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What am I going to do with a soul anyway, he says. Whoa. Fair point.
It's true. Souls
world.
Are rarely benefit you.
I tried to make a list of great, like, zinger lines. This was an episode that had fewer zinger lines and more just, like, devastating actions and like beautiful, you know, Goya compositional framing moments. And my list of lines, I think, said Hans Christian Anderfuck, and that was it.
There were a couple, but a lot of them were delivered very quietly in a way that you don't necessarily notice. Like the very beginning when Shiv talks about the bigot spigot, that was good.
Bigot spigot was good.
Can we talk about the beautiful symmetry of, I think it was the first or second episode where Kendall tries to get Shiv and Roman to rally to his side to take down their father, and it's a fail. And to this episode where it actually works and they come together, and because I just read a book about psychology, so I'm in this frame, but because he was able to get real with them and feel his feelings in front of them, even though they're extremely uncomfortable with feelings, that's enough to show them his humanity so that they can all come together as siblings in this beautiful moment that is, of course, thwarted, and you know it's doomed from the start. But it was so wonderful to see that all happen. Like, even though it's Succession and it's funny and it's a dark comedy about terrible people, to see them in touch with their love bond and their humanity was kind of nice.
Also, like, it's important that the only person who could do that, the only person who could bring three of them together is Shiv.
Oh, I was going to say is Kendall.
Well, Kendall was kind of dragged along as a piece of broken meat.
Yeah, but there's like a moment, where it flips and he's like, he remembers the divorce agreement. He's the one who knows.
Right. But
like,
he's in the car at that point.
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's
Shiv
true.
Is the
that's
one true. Who gets them into the car.
We should have known it was doomed because it was Shiv's idea. Like, everything she touches turns to shit.
All of them, though. All of them touch.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, that's the whole Wham-Scans play, right? Is that, like, you know, Logan never gets fucked and Kendall always gets fucked. So if he knows that Kendall is, you know, in a fucking minivan on the way to confront his dad, he knows that Logan's going to win this, and he knows that his strategic move here is to align himself with Logan.
Do you think there was a moment, I need to go back and watch again, or maybe do like 8 rewatchings. Was there a moment when Tom flipped? And was it in this episode or was it in the last? Like, I sort of wonder if it was that wedding toast where she's like, he knows she hates her mom, and she says, like, you know, to have the kind of marriage that we have, if that was the thing where Tom was like, okay, bye-bye.
In the toast to her mom, Shiv says, I hope your marriage is as rich and as happy and as rewarding and as fulfilling as mine. And I was like, oh my God. It's because their marriages are very similar, right? In that the mom's marrying this guy she has no respect for, obviously, and trash talks behind his back. And that's what Shiv did as well. She married a guy that she doesn't really have any respect for, but he tried.
All right. Can I give you the Tom theory here? My Tom theory is that there are two flips involved here. The first flip is when he flips decisively into Logan, like, surrogate son mode, right? When Logan's calling him son, when he's like, I will go to jail for you. And Siobhan takes this as a kind of smart tactical move for the Shiv-Tom marriage. But on some level, this is Tom just aligning himself with Logan and saying, like, you're the guy who never gets fucked. I want to make sure that I'm as close to you as I possibly can be. And why the fuck did I marry into this family anyway? It wasn't for Shiv who doesn't love me. It was for Logan who doesn't love me. And so, like, you have that Tom-Logan connection already. And then the second flip, which I think is the one you're asking about, is when did he flip against Shiv? And Here's my kind of, I don't know if this is my, like, attempt at a season 4 spoiler or something, but, like, I'm not convinced that what he did was true flip against Shiv or whether what he did was a sort of tactical hedging of the bets, in that Logan was always going to win. Logan was always going to do this deal. Logan was always going to find a way to do a deal with Caroline before or after the kids confronted him about the supermajority clause. And if Logan was always going to win, or even if there was a very high probability that Logan was going to win, it was always good to have one of them perceived to be on Team Logan rather than all of them being perceived to be, you know, Team Kill Dad. And so, in fact, what Tom did can be seen as a way of, like, saving the Shiv-Tom relationship with Logan rather than, like, knifing his wife in the back.
Yeah.
There is no way that Logan didn't know all about the supermajority clause and all of his teams of advisors weren't all over that all along. And this is the reason why, by the way, you know, Kerry was lying to Roman, why all of the kids were being cut out of the deal, why no one was even telling them that Carl and Frank were in town. The whole point was everyone was well aware that the kids had every ability to scupper the deal, so they needed to be kept out of the loop as long as possible. Logan just wanted to make sure they didn't get to Caroline before he did. But because he knew and they didn't, that was easy.
Why wouldn't he just convince the kids to come along on the deal with him? Like, is there just no way they would have, because they wouldn't get power in the deal?
Yeah, and that's a really, really good question. Because, like, this is the most Murdoch-y of all of the episodes this season. There's Murdoch after Murdoch after Murdoch, like, little reference throughout this episode. And of course, what happens in the end of the Murdoch saga is that Murdoch sells to some other company and none of the kids really take over 21st Century Fox, right? It just becomes a division of Disney. There was talk for like a millisecond that James would run that division, but that fell through very quickly. And that's very Murdochian, right? There was talk for a millisecond, like Mattson is like, I'll bring you in, you're crucial to this deal, to Roman, but then it falls through very quickly. And when Roman is in the car, he realizes that that's exactly what's going to happen. And so then the question is, why wouldn't the kids just happily go along with the deal in the way that the Murdoch kids did, right? And the conceit of the episode is that Siobhan has become so completely bought into the dream of taking over the company, and Roman has become so completely bought into the dream of taking over the company, that they will do anything to keep that dream alive, rather than effectively they're all being offered the same deal that Kendall was offered, right? Which is $2 billion and fuck off and go make your own pile. Which is a very attractive offer. And that's exactly what happened to, like, to James and to Lachlan, right? They both got $2 billion. They both get to go off, like, James gets to go off and buy, like, Art Basel and the Tribeca Film Festival and whatever else he's investing in, and, like, be his own media mogul. Lachlan gets, like, one of the toys that gets spun off, like News Corp. And, or Fox, I guess I should call it. And, yeah, in a real world, I think you're right, Emily, that they wouldn't be quite as upset about this, and they wouldn't feel this to be such a betrayal. Because, like, seriously, kids, did you honestly believe that one of you was going to take over?
Well, I mean, it's a TV show, right? They have to. Otherwise, it's no longer a TV show.
But also, like, throughout the episode, they're saying, like, Waystar Royco is a declining asset. Like, the price is falling. They just paid a historic fine. Like, they're going down. Gojo's going up. Like, get off the sinking ship, kids. Like, this is another indication of why they should not, any of them, be in the C-suite. Like, they suck. They're not good at this. Like, time to go.
And Mattson is so fucking good at this. Like, Mattson is the only one, like, compared to someone like Sandy, who everyone is very scared of and is like this paper tiger but never really bites, Mattson is the one person that that Logan encounters who's, like, possibly better at the game than Logan is. And Logan just sees him and goes, did I call it? Yeah, Logan chose his successor and it's Lucas Mattson?
Yes. Felix, as I was listening to that, going down the aisle of Food Town grocery shopping, I was like, yeah, that's good. Can we just talk about Alexander Sarsgaard's physicality in that in that scene where he's like kind of like with his t-shirt and his pool slides, kind of like lounging in his Lake Como furniture in the most kind of, I don't know, leonine alpha male way, just sort of like, yeah, okay, tossing this stuff out. It's so, I mean, the guy's what, 6'5"? It's just, it's incredible physical acting.
There's a little bit of Chamath in there, you know, with the, like the shirtless selfies. Like he's obviously been working out.
Did you look at, there's a, when they come off the boat, Mattson's, you know, taking the lead and then Logan's right there with him and Roman's kind of like tripping up the stairs behind them like a little boy. And then when they all sit down also, Roman is kind of like down from them in a way that makes him look like a kid at the adult table or something. And it's just so clear, like he's not ready for any of this and he's got to go.
So why didn't Roman understand what was happening? Because it was very clear in that conversation how this is being, and then he's just literally like, okay, Roman, you go back to the wedding. That Roman should have been running back like, woo, 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 we have a problem. Or did he just think like, oh, my dad's going to take care of me? Or did he not understand?
I think it was a little bit of all of the above. And also, I think that Lucas and Logan between them did a pretty good job of planting the seed in Roman's mind that if this deal went ahead with Gojo buying Waystar Royco, then Roman would be golden. He would be like in the middle of it all. He would be running something important. He would be crucial to the whole deal. And so like that was like, he kind of felt that if it did happen, he would be the winner.
Yeah. He was delusions. I think he was like, I'll keep this a secret and then I'll win this one. He was still kind of like fighting the siblings, but then that scene with Kendall maybe changes his mind.
You could see, I mean, again, amazing acting from Kieran Culkin in this one, but when they're in the car and he's trying to work out how to argue against what his siblings are saying without revealing to them what he has been promised, because like, you know, while Kendall has had his moment of honesty, you know, Roman can never be honest about anything. I did love that that classic line in the scene in the plaza when Ken falls apart and goes, I'm blown into a million pieces. And then Shiv gets the call from Led and Roman says, take that call. Leave me here with all the feelings. Thank you.
That and the, it took me 3/4 of an hour to get a gin and tonic. It's like,
Who's the real victim
Who's
here?
The real victim here?
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Okay, we need to talk about Jeremy Strong.
Yeah, get into
it. We need to talk about Jeremy Strong because the Michael Shulman New Yorker profile came out after we recorded the last episode. Oh, boy. And then Michael Shulman came out on Twitter last night and added a whole little extra bit about how that scene in the courtyard, like, was a great Jeremy Strong cathartic moment because he decided he could act it better if he was sitting on the ground than if he was sitting on something else. And so that was what made the whole thing, and he had a breakthrough. So, like, you know, I mean, people seem to agree that Jeremy Strong is a good actor. I'm not going to disagree with that one.
Incredible portrayal of an addict. Incredible.
Can we just take a step back and just fill listeners in case they're not
okay
in the minute by minute of the
because Aaron Sorkin doesn't have social media, so we're going to post this
on his behalf.
He asked us to tell this on his behalf. Michael Shulman publishes, The New Yorker publishes his profile of Jeremy Strong, and it's a great classic look at the actor and his method, and it goes really deep and kind of makes him look like an asshole.
Dick?
Maybe?
Yeah. I mean, it does.
He gets really into his roles. He asked Aaron Sorkin if he could get sprayed with tear gas.
Real tear gas
in a movie. And there's some like quotes that are questionable that make you think everyone kind of hates him. But I mean, it's a fine profile. And then the reaction to it is just outsized, I would say.
Celebrities need a hobby is basically my takeaway from the whole thing of like, calm down. It's a magazine profile. Did it make your friend look amazing? No. Did it make him look like the worst person in the world? No.
No.
Chill out, Aaron Sorkin.
It was a good profile. It made him look like a very serious,
It was a great profile,
actor.
But I think Helen Peterson, I can't remember who it was, made this point that it's a reported profile in a way that, like, celebrity profiles are never reported this way. And Michael Shulman really took this, like, as an investigative reporting job and was, like, went back and started interviewing a whole bunch of people who, like, hated Jeremy Strong when he was at Yale and that kind of thing and found all of these anecdotes. And we found and he also got some very damning quotes out of Brian Cox and Kieran Culkin about what it's like to work with him, which is apparently not fun. And that then created a whole sort of week of people saying, like, is he dead? Would Brian Cox and Kieran Culkin have been that rude about their co-star if they knew that they have to film season 4 with him?
It was like brilliant marketing. It was the most brilliant marketing for an HBO show until just yesterday when
Mr. Big comes out.
We don't need to go into that, but it was good. It was a good buildup for this episode in which Jeremy Strong acts the hell out of the role and kind of, there's nothing you can say. He did a great job.
I would say two things. Number one, I mean, you guys are both journalists. You understand that, right? Like, Michael Shulman gets these amazing quotes that probably in the interview process, Brian Cox and Kieran Culkin say these things, which are undeniably true, right? There's all this evidence on one side of the ledger that Jeremy Strong is a certain way. And yet when you are the person being interviewed, this is not saying that they're like gotcha questions or anything. It's just like you sometimes don't realize that your stuff is going to be added to a pile of other stuff. And so when it's added to a pile of other stuff, suddenly there's a log cabin of other stuff and that forms a reader's impression. But the other thing is it's like, yeah, he's an actor. Actors are weird and emotional and difficult, and they all have their own processes. And maybe it's because I'm married to a director who is very mad, by the way, that I am on the show without him right now. But somebody has to do childcare drop-off. And actors are weird. I love all my husband's actors, but seriously, they're weird.
Yeah. And again, he just... I feel like this episode was the perfect comeback to anyone
totally
who read that profile and was like, what a jerk. It's like, well, you know what? He gets it done.
It works
for him. He sits on the ground. Yeah. It was his seventh take. And he realized he had to sit on the ground and get dirty. And honestly, I was interested in the dirt part. I was like, oh, his pants are so dirty. Yeah. No one ever gets dirty
on this
show.
Continuity was a bit weak. Like, by the time he gets out to walk to confront his dad, his pants are magically clean. Because when you're a billionaire, your pants magically clean themselves in the back of the van.
They probably had a spare for him in the car.
But, But the other thing is that it was just beautifully shot. That scene, that still from that scene, just like ricocheted around Twitter. Mark Mylod has to get like at least as much credit as Jeremy Strong for that scene. It was perfectly paced. The cutting was amazing. The editing was amazing. And yeah, they found like the perfect location for a nervous breakdown. But hey, he bounced back within like 20 minutes, right? And next thing you know, he's on the phone talking about supermajority clauses.
Well, the power of the psyche to repress bad feelings is very strong. Like I said, I just read the book about psychology. So that's how I know this stuff.
So then, Emily, what do you do with Shiv's last moments? Talk about the power to repress bad feelings. Like you can see on her face her realization that she's been betrayed. And then she's just like, I'm okay.
I mean, I think kind of going back to what Felix said, she will take in that information and hold it until useful to deploy. Like she'll be kind of like have a half a gimlet eye on her husband and see how it all plays out, because maybe she can use it as leverage, like he was saying, to sort of get back in her father's good graces.
Yeah, she is now gonna have a mole inside the Logan camp, right? In the form of her husband.
I guess. I
mean, is he her mole? I don't know.
Is he not going to tell her what's going on? I mean, maybe one of the interesting things about this season is that for the first time, he has displayed a certain amount of jealousy of Shiv's position. And he's like, why are you more important than I am? And Shiv is just like, fuck off, of course. Maybe we've seen that in the past. But, like, now, yeah, he has finally achieved his dream of being, like, more important to Logan than Siobhan, of being, like, more central to the company than Siobhan. And Shiv is going to, you know, wind up going back into politics or whatever the hell she does. But she is going to have that, you know, she's going to have Tom in there in the way that Kendall and Roman are not.
And he must be successful in the company because, I mean, right. Forbes doesn't just profile any executive. They're doing a big
Yeah, his ATN
him.
Show is doing great. He turned on the biggest spigot and now he's getting all of the money and the sponsorships.
Yeah, so he's actually competent, maybe?
We've seen him be a little more competent, it seems, this season. Like, he seems sort of pathetic in past seasons, but now maybe, I don't know.
We still don't really know how he met Shiv, what he was doing, but
the only thing we know, what is it? He said he had a dick like a giant redwood and he fucks like a freight train. Can I say that?
Yeah.
This is a Succession show. If you can't swear, then you can't have a show.
I may have gotten the line slightly wrong, but I think I got the gist.
We have a warning at the top, so it's fine.
Okay.
Editing those once you do the warning.
Yeah, the disclaimers solve everything. Didn't you know that? I do need to just mention, like, we're still vaguely on the subject of that Jeremy Strong nervous breakdown scene. Number one, like, the masterful way in which Roman solves the issue through humor in a way that, like, actually works quite well. And the gin and tonic joke is, like, a terrible joke, but it also actually has its intended effect. But the other one, since we do love to talk about real world parallels here, is Thor Batista. When Roman goes, who among us hasn't clipped a kid with their Porsche? You know, and he goes over to Shiv. He's like, "You killed a kid, right?" And she's like, "Yeah." That is a reference to Thor Batista, who was I think he was like 20 or 19, something like that, the son of Iker Batista, the richest man in Brazil. And he clips a kid on a bicycle in his like $450,000 hypercar and kills him.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did they pay off the family?
And they paid off the family and there was never any prosecution. Yeah.
Wow.
I remember. Yeah. Yeah.
I've been wondering for like two seasons now if Kendall would face repercussions for what he did. And like they kept hinting he would. And like, is this where it went? He just tells his brother and sister and they make jokes about it. and he's absolved.
Yeah, I think really it is, because when Logan does the cover up, that's his way of saying, like, I own you now and I have this over you and you can't tell anyone. And this is like this incredible leverage that Logan has over Kendall. He brings it up again over dinner in this season. And Kendall, and it really has broken Kendall. And it's like the I killed a kid thing is the thing that really forces him to totally break down. And then it's Roman who comes out and says, like, may it please the court, but like, you didn't actually kill him. And in fact, you tried to save him. And I would have been out there, out of there. What is it, like a tabby cat out of a bathtub? And like, you know, he's kind of not wrong. Like, I don't think a jury would convict.
He should not have
left
not for the
crime,
scene.
But they would for the cover up, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's, it's the Chappaquiddick of it all.
But he's like, but in his own mind, up until that point, Kendall is a murderer. And then I think Roman really quite effectively, in the space of like three lines, manages to persuade him that maybe he's not.
I mean, I think it's also just the unburdening of it, right? Like, his father no longer has this secret. So that the weight of carrying that is gone. I think that's almost equal to what Roman says, I would argue.
Mm-hmm. It's also interesting, every season finale of this show features a nice bonding scene between the three of them. Season one, it was right before, the night before Shiv got married, they all went and like smoked a joint together.
In the boathouse, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then season two, they were on the yacht talking and Roman says, should we talk about our feelings? And they just make fun of him. And then season three, they actually do talk about feelings and Roman's the one who's making fun. But each is like this nice bonding scene. Which makes it's you like.
And meanwhile, Naomi, who's been so supportive, is nowhere to be seen. She's just completely disappeared.
Mm-hmm. There was some cut scene that they referenced in that New Yorker piece that she was in where she says something about, she has some line about how their relationship's gone south. It's in the New Yorker piece. Go read it. You could go read it right now if you want to.
Is it amazing to me that like we are talking about this whole episode, and I guess it's a real testament to Succession that they dispatched with the like, is Kendall dead, so quickly at the
in
top
the pre-credit of, sequence
in the pre-credit sequence, so quickly that as we were like fumbling to get our HBO Max to work and I was screaming at John because like the TV wasn't working, so I was like, I'm gonna miss it on Twitter, and we had to like rewind and watch it. I was like, oh, that's it, that's okay, sure, he's fine.
Talking, I mean, you know, in terms of good lines, that's a great one, which was easy to miss, was Comfrey's line just before Kendall shows up. They're like, how's things? And she goes, oh, no media pickup, so it's all good.
Yeah. She looked genuinely
happy. As long as the media didn't
that.
Work out that he tried to kill himself, it's basically fine.
It's mostly us calling Vanity Fair.
Because that would ruin her vacation. Right? I mean, from her perspective, if that got out, she'd be on the phone all day putting out.
Yeah, still not answered one, why one all these people are at the wedding.
Ruin wait. Your entire week, I'm telling you. It's just like,
why is Jerry at Caroline's wedding? Unclear. Greg, unclear. Nobody knows.
Well, there was an attempt to explain that in the previous episode, where it's basically Peter Mannion just wants all of the important people at his wedding because that's who he is. He's a social climber. And there was also that.
So Greg
attempt
is there.
That
he's family.
Well, Greg's kind of family-ish, sort of. I don't know.
He has come from Buffalo, Bright Star Buffalo, where he is a rising star.
But you have to have Greg, man. Well, I'm sure Tom brought Greg in. You know, Tom's like, well, we have to invite Greg. And Caroline is like, invite who you like. This isn't for me. This is for, you know, Peter. And then ultimately, Caroline sells out her kids for the sake of her here today, gone tomorrow husband, which is very Caroline. But she does have this line at the very end when she's on speakerphone and she's addressing the kids and she's trying to explain why she did what she did. And what she says is, I'm not sure it's been good for you. All the, you know, which is about as articulate as she can get. But she's right. Like, she negotiated this supermajority clause and gave her control and blah, blah, blah. And this is all very Murdochian, like the Murdoch kids had it too, you know, out of divorce. But she's right. Like, it, in fact, turned out to be terrible for them. And if it hadn't existed, they would have all been better off. And if she's going to tear it up now, yeah, that is good for them.
That's the thing about this whole episode, that I was on Logan's side. I was like, absolutely do this deal. Absolutely do not leave this company to these three morons. I think Logan does call them morons. And I was like, you know what? They are morons. Like, they each had their shot. They all messed it up. Like, they're morons. Do not sell your, do not leave your company in the hands of these people. I feel like as far as business decisions go, this was a good one. Like, the kids were just wrong.
If you guys had to pick one kid, like, who do you think is the smart? I know who I think is the smartest, but also just, like, I think Kendall's the smartest, but is just, like, such an abjectly ridiculous human being that he can't function.
Like, being smart isn't enough. You also need executive/leadership abilities, and Kendall obviously has none of those.
Right.
There was this very brief aside a few episodes ago where Siobhan and Roman are charged with basically putting together the deal sheet for Mattson, who ultimately fails to come into the office to be sold on this deal, and which in hindsight, of course, was a great move by Mattson. And Shiv basically says, well, we know this deal makes sense. And Roman says, well, if we knew that, I wouldn't have stayed up all night, you know, getting my minions to put together this PowerPoint. Like, Roman has actually been working,
yes,
right? He has been involved. He has been doing an actual job. He has been staying up all night, putting deal sheets together with minions. Like, he has built up enough of a relationship with Jerry that he can look at her and she can be like, look, there's nothing I can do. Like, I have to represent the shareholders here, which is entirely true. He has no cards to play when she's like, how would siding with you be, like, you know, in my interest? But it's not just that weird, like, fucked up sex thing that they have. It's also that she does on some level think that he has some kind of abilities. So I would say probably Roman.
Interesting. I disagree, but
go on.
Well, I think Roman's done some of the work, but I don't think he has the, like, ineffable thing. I don't think
Of course he doesn't have the ineffable thing. None of them have the ineffable thing.
No, I think Kendall's got, like, a little spark of it, but it's so weighed down by everything else. Like, it's like the little moment of him that you see in the car, that's the thing that fools you into thinking that he's got the spark, and then everything else swallows that. And Shiv is a fake. She's a fake. She's like, she is going through the motions. She does understand their father, I think, maybe better than the other two do. I don't know. Maybe not. No, maybe she doesn't. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay, so I listen to the Kara Swisher official podcast, not going to lie. And wow. Anthony Scaramucci was on it, which...
Wow.
Oh, come on.
I know.
Wow, you did that?
I know, you guys. I'm sorry. I was running, jogging, walking. Doesn't matter. Anyway, Anthony Scaramucci was on the podcast. We know him because he served in the Trump administration for like 6 days or 6 hours or something. And he's leveraged that ever. He's been eating out on that ever since. And he runs a fake hedge fund or something.
He's tried to get me fired at least three and possibly four times. So I like that's something.
Yeah. So he was on her podcast. And the reason I'm bringing all this up is to say, like, he started talking about how Shiv is his least favorite character on the show and she's the worst of the Roy children. And I feel like people's reactions to her are super kind of sexist. And the whole show is kind of set up that way too. Like, she's like power hungry and like condemned for being power hungry on a show that's all about being power hungry? Like, I don't understand that really. Like,
yeah, Logan's reaction to her is super sexist for sure. Like when Roman's like, can I come along to the meeting with Matt? And he's like, fuck off and stick around with your dick pics. And then Shiv like seizes her opportunity. She's like, well, if he doesn't come, can I come? And Logan's like, all right, Roman.
I think she's just more transparent in some ways. Like, she just says out loud the things that the others don't or can't.
Yeah, maybe. The thing.
But you're right.
It is
super sexist. I mean, maybe it's my internalized sexism.
I wonder about that. Like, people seem to hate her more than the others, but they're all kind of equally bad.
I definitely do not hate her more. I kind of like her more than the others. I think definitely of the three of them, she's the one I like the most or dislike the least. I think her ability to, you know, do that deal with Sandy and Stewie was like, it showed actual sort of psychological intelligence. You managed to get Sandy Jr. to come around. Like, she's not, and you know, her ability to persuade Ravenhead to turn on the raisin, you know, like, she's got actual abilities. She's not like, it was always, for the first couple seasons, it was always Roman who was the useless one. And
she's just undone by her father. Like, she can't.
Yeah.
She can't function around.
The closer she gets to Logan, the more kind of undone she becomes, for sure.
I think I just have a little bit of personal resentment because on my honeymoon, I posted what I thought was a really kind of funny, over-the-top picture of myself in a hot tub enjoying a glass of champagne, and Felix commented Shiv underneath it.
Inaccurate.
You've never forgiven me.
Never. I've never forgiven you for that.
I was like,
it's just because I have strawberry blonde hair. Leave me alone.
Sorry.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hello, I'm Imi Harper. On the Slow Newscast from Tortoise, I tell the story of how a Hong Kong billionaire was silenced.
I got bombs thrown into my house. I got people came here, ransacked my computer. And I got people fracturing me. I got this and that, but I'm safe.
And what it reveals about the freedoms Hong Kong no longer enjoys. Listen to Hong Kong's Rebel Billionaire on the Slow Newscast, wherever you get your podcasts.
Favorite lines? Lizzie, you have a very short list.
I have a very short list. What is it? I want to be... Pass! I need to come back to it. I need to find where it's written down. I want to be my... my own Greg. I want to be my own Greg.
I like that. That's good.
Didn't Tom say to Greg, you could have your own Greg?
Oh, right.
Yeah, you can have 20 of them.
You can have 20 of your own Gregs.
Yeah, that was good.
I kind of like Logan saying, would you mind, because would you mind not with him in here giving me the doggy evils? Can you take him out, Romulus? Like, I that was That was a good line. The doggy evils. And then literally just like, take him out. He meant out of the room, but also just take him out. Just fucking take him out, Romulus.
He didn't, though. He didn't take him out.
He didn't.
Probably regret
he had,
it.
He had, like, Roman had, like, maybe, I don't know, 8 millimeters of backbone and spine, which is more than he's shown in the rest of the show.
Yeah. Okay, my favorite line, I had to listen to it, like, 3 times to get this all down. But here we go. Say hello to someone who could be Logan's ex-wife's step-cousin-in-law and heir apparent to the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg, 12 times removed or some shit, and potential count of somewhere and legitimate claimant to the Dorman throne of Italy. Well done.
Greg! Well
you don't
done,
need to
Greg.
Be your own Greg when you've got that.
He's about to be royalty, so there you go.
None of us even talked about I'm the eldest son.
Oh my Aww. God, Con!
We
yeah,
forgot about
Connor. Poor Con.
Well, that's I mean, his there problem, is the, isn't it?
The Con sub. I mean, also some amazing acting from Alan Ruck on this one, who normally is just a caricature, but like when he starts like carving up the table with his knife and then just explodes.
I mean, it is pretty rude of Kendall to say he's the oldest when he's not. When Connor's right there. I related.
It's a little bit of it's a little bit of foreshadowing, right? You know how, you know, like the breakdown of Kendall finally gives him the ability to come together with his siblings. Like that complete breakdown that Connor has with his siblings at that table finally gives him the sort of vulnerability to turn to Willa and say, like, you know, my siblings hate me, you hate me. Like, there's some Swede is going to take over ATN and ban me, and like my life is miserable, and become just such a pathetic little hangdog that Will is just, oh fuck it. Like that's
she
the actual way to propose.
Finally, feels that sorry for him. the pity marriage proposal acceptance from Willa.
the mercy affiancement.
How bad could it be?
Fuck it. How bad could it be? Oh.
I mean, that's exactly what you want to hear from someone you've just proposed married to, right? Proposed married
yeah.
to. Oh, fuck it. How bad
yeah,
could it be?
He deserves whatever happens next, right? I mean.
So what's going to happen next, guys? Like, I mean, I do think this is the perfect end to Succession. We have found out, you know, that none of them are going to succeed. It's we have completely resolved the question that was raised in season 1, episode 1, and we have neatly tied everything up in a bow, and, you know, why are they even making a season 4?
They could walk away now, and it would be a very effective mic drop. They're not going to, but...
Yeah. It's a good way to end the season, and it's a good way to end the show.
Yeah. There's unfortunate speculation I'm seeing. Chatter. People are saying, Felix, that Shiv is pregnant. And so if they show up in season 4 and a baby... Is in the plot, we can't watch. It's over.
Maybe that's why we were getting all that maca root, blah, 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 blah. Maybe it wasn't about Carrie at all.
Oh.
It's Chekhov's maca root.
It's so weird, like, who was in the show. Like, you know, there was that whole weird subplot about Logan wanting to have more babies via Carrie. And then there was the very brief scene between Marsha and Carrie where Marsha seems to be very nice to Carrie. And you're like... Marsha is so mean to everyone who's fucking her husband that, like, what is going... Does she not know? She's far too smart to not know, right?
I got the sense that she was just sort of treating her like an underling and that was actually more insulting than anything else.
She doesn't care anymore. She got her deal.
Yeah.
She leveled up whatever her contract is and doesn't matter.
Yeah, I have been disappointed. Like, season 2 was a disappointment to me because Marsha was pretty much MIA. Season 3 was a disappointment to me because Marsha was pretty much MIA. I'm just not getting my Marsha fix, man. I need more Marsha.
And only one weird Adrian Brody episode.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, he came and then he disappeared. But the one thing we can be pretty sure of is we're going to get more Alexander Skarsgård in season 4.
Yay!
Yes.
Woo!
Yes. with his very well-fitting t-shirt. I mean, the way, like, just the way that the t-shirts hang between Alexander Sarsgaard and Jeremy Strong, you know, it's everything you need to know.
I'm okay with it.
They're probably very expensive.
Don't listen, John.
I can guarantee you that they're extremely expensive t-shirts.
Like the $600 Loro Piano baseball cap? Yeah.
So I think that is actually it for Slate Money Succession. We are not going to be back for however long, a year? It's going to be a while. And who knows what season 4 is going to bring. But listen, guys, thank you so much for sticking with us. It's been awesome recapping all of these episodes, and thank you to Shayna Roth for managing to turn this episode around in just absolute record time, because we did not get a screener for this one. And mostly, Lizzie, thanks for coming on.
I'm so excited to be on the finale.
The finale.
I need to double cross you very quickly right now.
Exactly. The next thing you know, I'm going to get some kind of comment
Felix,
on my
I
Insta.
Have an announcement about the host of the next season of this show.
Oh.
It's me.
Lizzie, are you taking over?
Yeah.
Have you just knifed me?
Yeah.
Wow. Damn, that was mean. All right, I'm gonna get you back somehow in an Instagram comment or somewhere else.
See you on Lackey Slack.